Welcome, everybody, to the Bereans Bible Institute. I'm Tim Warner, your teacher. We are in module number 12 called Faithful Shepherds. This is lesson number 6. This lesson I have titled Following in the Footsteps of Joshua. You may remember in previous lessons we went through Hebrews 11 and showed that Hebrews 11 and 12 teaches us that we are to, as faithful Christians, we are to follow in the steps of the great men of faith who went before us. And we now come to Joshua. Joshua is a perfect example of a faithful shepherd. Now, the Bible says that Moses was faithful in all his household, according to Hebrews chapter 3, verse 2. But he did make his mistakes, as we know, which for one of those reasons he was not allowed to cross over Jordan and go into the promised land. But he appointed a successor to himself, a man who had been with him and had been his assistant since the beginning, since they first came out of Egypt. Joshua was Moses' apprentice. And for 40 years, Joshua was Moses' apprentice before God then finally had Moses turn over the leadership of the nation of Israel to his apprentice, Joshua. And what we see is the reason that Joshua was or became Moses' successor and became a faithful shepherd to lead God's people Israel was because he was faithful as an apprentice. And one of the things that I want to stress in this lesson is that leadership or being a shepherd is something that must come from God, not from self-promotion. There are a lot of people who strive to promote themselves because they want positions of power or positions to be looked up to or for other reasons. And none of those reasons are reasons to be God's shepherd over his people. The only thing that qualifies us to be God's shepherd is if God himself calls us and places us in that position to be a shepherd over his people. Now, I want to just emphasize a couple of verses from the New Testament before we get actually into the story of Joshua. In Luke chapter 14, verse 11, Jesus said, "For whoever exalts himself will be humble, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." You may also remember that Jesus said that the last would be first in the kingdom, and the first would be last. So if you want to be exalted, the way to that is to be humble and to take the lowest place and let God do it. In 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 5, Peter was talking about elders. He was talking about how elders should lead. And then after he talked about elders, look what he says. He says, "You younger men, likewise be subject to your elders, and all of you clothe yourselves with humility toward one another. For God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in the proper time." Now notice, he's talking there, he first talks about the elders, how they're to lead, then he talks about the younger men who were not yet elders, and he told them how they should behave themselves so that God himself would then exalt them at the proper time to be leaders in God's assemblies. In Luke chapter 16, verses 10 through 12, we see this. "He who is faithful," these are Jesus' words, "he who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to you who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own?" The idea in all these passages is that a man needs to first be tested. He needs to first be shown to be faithful in the little things before he's given responsibility over greater things, which would be in leading God's people beyond his own immediate family. Now, all men who are husbands and fathers are charged with leading their own families. But We need to be faithful in leading our own immediate families, that is those dwelling in our home, to lead them faithfully before we can become qualified to lead a larger group of people. God calls shepherds to lead his people. He calls those who are humble and obedient servants. He calls those who have been proven faithful in the little things, displaying their reliability with much greater responsibilities. Those who dismiss God's seemingly insignificant commands by making excuses or nullifying them, they've already proven themselves to be unfaithful in the little things, and therefore they will be unfaithful in that which is greater. That's what Jesus said, and that's what applies to those who are to be leaders. Those who want to be leaders and are unfaithful in small things, unfaithful in what they consider to be insignificant commandments of God, they're not going to be faithful in the more weighty things. Now, let's look at Joshua's apprenticeship under Moses, and this is before he was given any responsibility of his own. But under Moses' leadership, we see this. Let's turn in our Bibles to Exodus chapter 17, and I want to read verses 8 through 16. Excuse me. Now Amalek came and fought with Israel in Rephidim. And Moses said to Joshua, "Choose us some men and go out, fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand." So Joshua did as Moses said to him, and he fought with Amalek, and Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And so it was when Moses held up his hand that Israel prevailed, and when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands became heavy. So they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it, and Aaron and Hur supported his hands, one on each side and the other on the other side, and his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. So Joshua defeated Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. Now, two things I want you to notice from this. Number one, Joshua obeyed what Moses said without question. Secondly, it was God who provided the victory through Moses, through Joshua, because it was only as Moses' hands were being upheld that the Lord defeated the enemies of Israel. I want you to note Joshua's obedience in this passage. Now, let's go to Exodus chapter 24. And verse 13. Let's go back to verse 12. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Come up to me on the mountain, and be there, and I will give you tablets of stone, and the law and commandments which I have written, that you may teach them." So Moses arose with his assistant Joshua. Note this. And Moses went up to the mountain of God. And he said to the elders, "Wait here for us until we come back to you. Indeed, Aaron and Hur are with you. If any man has difficulty, let him go to them." Then Moses went up into the mountain, and a cloud covered the mountain. Now the glory of the Lord rested on Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it 6 days. And on the seventh day he called to Moses out of the midst of the cloud. The sight of the glory of the Lord was like a consuming fire on top of the mountain in the eyes of the children of Israel. So Moses went into the midst of the cloud and went up into the mountain, and Moses was in the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. So what I want you to notice here is that Moses, because of Joshua's faithfulness previous to this, when God came down on Mount Sinai and God told Moses to go up into Mount Sinai to meet with him, he took Joshua with him as his assistant. And they climbed the mountain together. And then when God's presence came down on the mountain in the cloud, God called to Moses out of the cloud to come into the cloud at the top of the mountain. Moses alone went into the cloud on the top of the mountain. Joshua waited for him outside while God spoke to him. And Moses was there for 40 days and 40 nights while Joshua waited patiently outside. And then, of course, they came down from the mountain. You know the story that they saw the all that was going on with the golden calf and all that sort of thing happen. But I want you now to turn to Exodus chapter 33. And I want to start reading in verse 7. Before I do that, the thing that I want you to notice from this passage is that Joshua was seeking to follow in the footsteps of Moses. And Joshua sought to have the close kind of relationship that Moses had with God. Again, Joshua observed that Moses went into the cloud while he waited outside on Mount Sinai. And this desire of Joshua to have the same kind of relationship with God that Moses had is evident in this passage. And I want to read this passage to you in Exodus 33, beginning in verse 7. Moses took his tent and pitched it outside the camp. Now, this is Moses' own tent, okay? He pitched it outside the camp, far from the camp, and he called it, quote, the tabernacle of meeting. That is, this is going to be the place where I'm going to go out to be private, away from the rest of Israel, in order to meet with God. And this was the Son of God that he was meeting in the cloud, pillar of cloud. And it came to pass that everyone who sought the Lord went out of the tabernacle of meeting, and it came to pass that everyone who sought the Lord went out to the tabernacle of meeting, which was outside the camp. So not only did Moses go out there, and Moses went into this tent to meet with God, but others who were seeking the Lord would go outside that tent, and they would pray outside of Moses' tent, which was called the tabernacle of meeting. So it was, whenever Moses went out of the tabernacle, that all the people rose, and each man stood at his tent door and watched Moses until he had gone into the tabernacle. And it came to pass, when Moses entered the tabernacle, this is his own tent that he pitched outside, that the pillar of cloud descended and stood at the door of the tabernacle, and the Lord talked with Moses. And the people saw the pillar of cloud standing at the tabernacle door, and all the people rose and worshipped each man in his tent door. So the Lord spoke to Moses face to face as a man speaks to his friend, and he would return to the camp. Now I want you to notice this last statement. But his servant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, did not depart from the tabernacle. That is the tent that Moses set up in order to meet with God. Even though Moses came and went, Joshua spent his time waiting at the tent of meeting, where the pillar of cloud would come down and then depart and ascend after Moses had met with God. There's Joshua hanging out at this tent on a continual basis. Now, how long he did that, it doesn't say, but he did this apparently for quite some time. And what does that show about Joshua, if not he desired to have the face-to-face relationship with the Son of God who appeared in the pillar of cloud to Moses and spoke to Moses face-to-face as a man speaks to his friend? Joshua desired that as well, and he sought that, and he was diligent in seeking and pursuing this kind of a relationship with God. And we'll see later in the book of Joshua that he in fact did finally have that same kind of relationship with God that Moses previously had. All right, now I want us to go to Numbers chapter 13. This now becomes the time of Joshua's testing. One of the things that is absolutely critical for someone who desires to be a shepherd of God's people is that he's tested and that he passes the test. And often, in fact, probably almost always, the testing comes when you least expect it. The testing comes when circumstances, unusual circumstances occur, and how you react to those circumstances becomes a test of whether or not you are qualified to lead God's people, whether or not you have learned the lessons that need to be learned before you can lead God's people. And Joshua's testing came in Numbers chapter 13. Let's go there. We see that in verse 16, well, actually, beginning in verse 1, we're not going to read that, but 1 through 15, it talks about the names of the 12 spies, one from each tribe, that Moses sent into the promised land to spy out the land and bring back a report prior to their going in and engaging in battle with God leading as he had promised. In verse 16, it says, these are the names of the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land. And Moses called Hoshea, the son of Nun, Joshua. Now, Hoshea, or Hoshea, or Yehoshua, actually is how it's pronounced in Hebrew, was his name originally, but Moses changed his name or called him Yeshua in Hebrew. Yeshua is actually the same name as Jesus in Greek, and it is Jesus in English. And Yeshua means salvation. There's absolutely no doubt that the fact that Joshua, was Moses' successor, and that Moses was not able to take the Israelites into the promised land because he failed, yet Yeshua, Jesus, was the name of the man who did take them into the promised land to receive the inheritance and conquered the land. There's no question that this is a allegory of the law of Moses being promising the inheritance to Israel if they obeyed God's law versus the new covenant, which promises the eternal inheritance of the land as promised to Abraham. And it is by grace through faith that that is achieved through Jesus. It's no coincidence that God told Mary to call her son Yeshua, or Joshua, Jesus, because of this parallel. There's no question about that. And he became the successor of Moses, and his law became the successor to the law of Moses. Anyway, let's look at, if you go down to verse, let me see here. Let's go down to verse 27. This is when the spies, let's go back, actually let's go to verse 25. And they returned, so Joshua and Caleb are the only two good spies, right? Anyway, verse 25. Then they returned from spying out the land after 40 days. Now they departed and came back to Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the children of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Then they told him and said, we went to the land where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. The Hittites, the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the banks of the Jordan. Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and take possession, for we are all able to overcome it. But the men who had gone up with him said, we are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, the land through which we have gone as spies is the land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants, the descendants of Anak, came from the giants, and we were like grasshoppers in their own sight. So we were in their sight. So all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, if only we had died in the land of Egypt, if only we had died in this wilderness, why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword, that our wives, our children, should become victims, that it would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? So they said to one another, let us select a leader and return to Egypt. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before the assembly of the congregation of Israel, of the children of Israel. But Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes, and they spoke to all the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, the land we pass through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Notice Joshua, in speaking up like this, is saying God is the one who promised the land to us, and he's the one who said he would go before us, or send the angel of the Lord before us and to fight our battles. He's the one who said that. The others doubted God. They didn't believe him. Joshua believed God, and so did Caleb. Verse 9, only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. And all the congregation said to stone them with stones. That is, stone Joshua and Caleb and probably Moses. Now the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of meeting before all the children of Israel. Then the Lord said to Moses, how long will these people reject me, and how long will they not believe me? With all the signs which I have performed among them, I will strike them with pestilence and disinherit them, for I will make of you a nation greater and mightier than they. Let's skip down to Moses speaking. He says, verse 17, and now I pray, let the power of my Lord be great, just as you have spoken, saying, the Lord is long-suffering and abundant in mercy, forgiving iniquity and transgression. But he by no means clears the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation. Pardon the iniquity of this people, I pray, according to the greatness of your mercy, just as you have forgiven this people from Egypt even until now. Then the Lord said, I have pardoned according to your word, but truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord. Because all these men who have seen my glory and the signs which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness and have put me to the test now these 10 times and have not heeded my voice, they certainly shall not see the land of which I swore to their fathers, nor shall any of those who rejected me see it. I want you to notice that they're rejecting God, not Moses, not Joshua and Caleb. They've rejected God. But my servant Caleb, because he had a different spirit in him and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land where he went, and his descendants shall inherit it. And we know that also Joshua went in as well. Let's go down to verse 35. I, the Lord, have spoken this. I will surely do it. I will surely do so to all the evil congregation who have gathered together against me. In this wilderness they shall be consumed, and there they shall die. Now the men whom Moses sent out to spy the land, who returned and made all the congregation complain against him by bringing a bad report of the land, those very men who brought the evil report about the land died by a plague before the Lord. But Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, remained alive of the men who went out to spy the land. This was Joshua's time of testing. Now, let's look at Joshua's actual leadership. He goes now from being an apprentice to being Moses' successor. All right, so let's look at Numbers chapter 27. Let's read verses 18 through 23. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Take Joshua, the son of Nun, with you, a man in whom is the Spirit, and lay your hands on him. Set him before Eleazar the priest, and before all the congregation, and inaugurate him in their sight. And you shall give some of your authority to him, that all the congregation of the children of Israel may be obedient. And he shall stand before Eleazar the priest, who shall inquire before the Lord for him, by the judgment of the Urim. At his word they shall go out, and at his word they shall come in, he and all the children of Israel with him, all the congregation." So Moses did as the Lord commanded him. He took Joshua and set him before Eleazar the priest and before all the congregation, and he laid his hands on him and inaugurated him, just as the Lord commanded by the hand of Moses. So Moses was commanded to officially inaugurate, or you might say ordain, his successor, Joshua, and that the authority would be passed from Moses to Joshua. And why was that? Because Joshua was faithful. He was faithful all during the time of his apprenticeship under Moses. He had a record. Now, this took 40 years from the time they came out of Egypt until the time Moses ordained Joshua to be his successor by the word of the Lord. And this is God calling Joshua. And it was after, number one, Joshua was obedient to Moses. He went out and he fought the Amalekites, and God delivered the Amalekites into his hand. He went out to remain at the tabernacle of meeting because he desired to know God. He pursued a relationship with God, the kind of relationship that he saw that Moses had. Then he was he was faithful when the testing comes. He believed God. He was not disobedient to God's commandment, and he trusted that God would fulfill their promises, even when they were to go into battle. The promises that God had made, even when they were going directly into battle and were being put in harm's way. He trusted in God. He was obedient. And because of his record of humble obedience and service to Moses, he then was exalted by God. I want to read again this verse I read from at the beginning of my lesson. I want to read all three of these verses again. Luke 14:11, "For whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." That was Joshua. 1 Peter 5:5, "You younger men, likewise, be subject to your elders, and all of you, clothe yourselves with humility toward one another, for God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time." Not exalting yourself, but he may exalt you when the time is right for that. And then finally, Luke 16:10-12, "He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to you your trust, the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in what is another's, who will give you what is your own?" Who will entrust to you a larger responsibility? That's the point. All right. Now, let's look at Joshua's time as Israel's shepherd, and he was indeed a faithful shepherd. Let's go to Joshua chapter 1. Verse 1. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun. By the way, this is the first time we have a record of God speaking directly to Joshua as opposed to Moses, and then Moses relaying things. Let me start over. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, you and this people, to the land which I am giving to them, the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread, I have given to you, as I said to Moses, from this wilderness and Lebanon, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, to the great sea toward the going down of the sun, shall be your territory. Now I want you to notice verse 5. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. Wow. God is sending Joshua in to conquer the land, but he's saying, I'm going to be right there beside you. And that was by means of the angel or the messenger of the Lord. I will not leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and of good courage, for to this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn, you should underline this, do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate in it day and night. You should underline, those of you who desire to be shepherds of God's people, you need to underline that. You'd better be meditating in God's word day and night, that you may observe to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success. It's only by being obedient, and being obedient to every commandment that God has, whether they're large or small. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. And believe me, you can't do ministry unless God is with you, unless God is fighting your battles for you, and you're just simply being obedient and his humble servant. Let's skip down to verse 16. So they answered Joshua, saying, all that you command us, we will do, and wherever you send us, we will go. Just as we heeded Moses in all things, so we will heed you. Only the Lord your God be with you, as he was with Moses. Again, this is the critical part. Is God with you? Is God leading you? Are you simply doing what God commands you to do and leaving God to do the heavy lifting? Is that how you intend to lead, or are you trying to do it by your own strength and your own power? Because that's not going to work. All right. All right. Now let's go to chapter 6. A couple of things I want to reiterate from this passage in Joshua 1 before we go to chapter 6. Number one is God's presence was going to go in with them. God was going to be with them to go into battle. That's the only way they could survive, never mind win. Secondly, they must obey every commandment of God that he gave them in the law of Moses. They cannot turn to the left or the right, and they must be meditating on God's commandments daily in order to be sure that they're being obedient to them. All right, now let's go to chapter 6. You all know the story of the overthrow of Jericho. So I'm not going to bother to read the whole story, but I do want to point out something from that passage. If you go to chapter 6, verse 17, this is as they were, God was giving them instructions about surrounding the city and marching around it seven times, or 7 days, and then seven times on the seventh day, and all that. But I want you to notice what it says in verse 17 through 19. Now the city shall be doomed by the Lord to destruction. Again, there's no way they could have defeated their enemies unless God knocked those walls down. Again, the importance of God being with them is the critical part. Now the city shall be doomed by the Lord to destruction, and all who are in it. Only Rahab the harlot shall live, she and all who are with her in the house, because she hid the messengers that we sent. And you, by all means, abstain from the accursed things, that is the possessions, the booty, lest you become accursed when you take of the accursed things and make all the camp of Israel a curse and a trouble, and trouble it. But all the silver and gold and vessels of bronze and iron are consecrated to the Lord, they shall come into the treasury of the Lord. And that, skip down to 24, after the walls fell and all that, it says, but they burned the city and all that was in it with fire, only the silver, the gold, the vessels of bronze and iron they put in the treasury of the house of the Lord. And Joshua spared Rahab the harlot, and so forth. All right, now let's go down to chapter 7, verse 1. Excuse me. Hang on 1 second. Okay, we're going to read actually through 26. But the children of Israel committed a trespass regarding the accursed things, that is the booty. For Achan, the son of Carmi, the son of Zibdi, the son of Zerah of the tribe of Judah, took of the accursed things. So the anger of the Lord burned against the children of Israel. Now Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai, which is beside Beth Aven, on the east side of Bethel. And he spoke to them, saying, go up and spy out the country. So the men went up and spied out Ai. And they returned to Joshua and said to them, do not let all the people go up, but let about 2,000 or 3,000 men go up and attack Ai. Do not weary all the people, for the people of Ai are few. So about 3,000 men went up from there, from the people, but they fled before the men of Ai. And the men of Ai struck down about 36 men, for they chased them from before the gate as far as Shebarim, and struck them down on the descent. Therefore the hearts of the people melted and became like water. So they had a great victory at Jericho, and then they think the next one's going to be a piece of cake, and they're chased by their enemies, and 36 men die. Then Joshua tore his clothes and fell to the earth on his face before the ark of the Lord until evening. He and the elders of Israel, and they put dust on their heads. And Joshua said, alas, Lord God, why have you brought this people over the Jordan at all to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites, to destroy us? Oh, that we had been content to dwell on the other side of the Jordan. Oh, Lord, what shall I say when Israel turns its back before its enemies? For the Canaanites and all the inhabitants of the land will hear it, and surround us and cut off our name from the earth. Then what will you do for your great name? So the Lord said to Joshua, get up. Why do you lie thus on your face? Israel has sinned, and they have also transgressed my covenant, which I commanded them. For they have even taken some of the accursed things, and have both stolen and deceived, and they have also put it among their own stuff. Therefore the children of Israel could not stand before their enemies, but turn their backs before their enemies, because they have become doomed to destruction. Now I want you to underline the next statement. Neither will I be with you any more, unless you destroy the accursed from among you. And so you all know the story. Joshua then had to call the people, and the Lord had to point out who the guilty party was, was Achan. Who was the one who had hidden his stuff in his tent, and his family was aware of it. And Achan and his whole family were taken outside, stoned, and burned with fire because of what they had done. Two things. Number one, they disobeyed a direct command of God. Now, it may have seemed like an insignificant command to Achan and to his family. Secondly, they didn't understand fully yet the consequences of disobeying what he had said in chapter 1, which is, the law that I command you, don't turn to the left or to the right. You obey the law, you pay attention to the details, and you must be obedient to my commandments. Otherwise, I'm not going to be with you in battle. Now, here they are. You know, they come all the way out of Egypt. The Red Sea closed behind them. You know, a whole generation died in the wilderness. Now, finally, things are looking up. They go across the Jordan. They're in the promised land. God now has said, I'm going to deliver the promised land to you. And what happens? He says, I'm going to be with you. I'm going to do these things. Just be careful to obey my commandments. This man took God's commands lightly, and God judged the whole nation, and 36 men died because Achan took God's commandment lightly. This series, Faithful Shepherds, is about men being qualified to lead God's people, to lead groups of God's people in the end times. The end times are very close upon us. And this flippant attitude about God's commandments and sort of just brushing them off as not being important and thinking you know better than God's commandments is the recipe for disaster. It's the recipe for this kind of disaster. And if you have men like that leading God's people in the end times who are flippant about God's commandments and not serious about them, they're going to lead people into disaster in the end times. Maybe as bad as this, maybe worse than this. All right, that's just a little bit of a warning. All right, so that's, let me see. God said he would not be with Israel anymore until they took Achan out. He had to go. He had to be sacrificed, if you will, in order for God's presence to continue with Israel and for him to be with them in their battles. There's no way they could win any of these battles without Joshua. Now, I just want you to go over to chapter 8 of Joshua briefly, in verses 30 through 35. It says, now Joshua built an altar to the Lord of Israel on Mount Ebal, as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had commanded the children of Israel, as it is written in the book of the law of Moses, an altar of whole stones, which no man has wielded an iron tool. And they offered on it burnt offerings to the Lord and sacrificed peace offerings. And there, in the presence of the children of Israel, he wrote on the stones a copy of the law of Moses, which he had written. Then all Israel and their elders and officers and judges stood on either side of the ark before the priests, the Levites, who bore the ark of the covenant of the Lord, the stranger as well as he who was born among them. Half of them were in front of Mount Gerizim and half of them in front of Mount Ebal, as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had commanded before, that they should bless the people of Israel. And afterward he read all the words of the law and blessed the blessings and the cursings, according to all that is written in the book of the law. There was not a word of all that Moses had commanded which Joshua did not read before all the assembly of Israel, with the women, the little ones, the strangers who were living among them. Well, why did Moses do this? They had just gotten their tails whipped at Ai because God said, I'm not going to be with you because you're being disobedient to my commandments. So Joshua now reiterates the commandments of God. Make sure everybody understands, number one, what God's commandments are. Number two, the consequences. They had a demonstration of the consequences if they took God's commandments flippantly, and how next time it's going to be even worse, no doubt, when they do that. All right, now, what I want to do in the last part of my lesson, I'm almost finished here, is I just want to show you how that the Apostle Paul took some of these very same principles that we learn from Joshua, both as an apprentice to Moses and then as a leader he took some of these same principles and he applied them to shepherds in the assemblies. Let's go to 2 Timothy chapter 2. And I want to read 2, 1 through 4. And this is what's interesting about this is Paul was God's apostle. Timothy was Paul's apprentice, just like Joshua was an apprentice to Moses. And Paul was training Timothy to be his successor. And then he also expected Timothy then to do the same. That is to train other men under him, other proteges, if you will, under him, and to then appoint them into positions so that the message of Christ and the assemblies could continue to spread, the gospel could continue to spread. And so he says in chapter 2, 2 Timothy chapter 2, you therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus. And the things that you have heard from me among many witnesses, commit these to, I want you to notice this, faithful men. Which is part of the reason why this series is called Faithful Shepherds. It comes from this passage of Scripture. The things that you have heard from me among many witnesses, commit these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. You therefore must endure hardship as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No one engaged in warfare entangles himself with the affairs of this life that he may please him who enlisted him as a soldier. Now I'm going to stop there. Joshua was a soldier. Joshua was a commander of the army of Israel. Joshua was single-minded in how he was going to lead the soldiers under him. And Timothy is being encouraged to follow Joshua's example here by Paul. Go over to 1 Timothy chapter 3. Paul gives instructions to Timothy regarding some of these faithful men whom he's supposed to train to be shepherds in the assemblies. And he says in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 1, this is a faithful saying. If a man desires the position of a bishop, he desires a good work. A bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife. The Greek literally says a one-woman man. Temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, but covetous. Not covetous. One who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence. For if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how will he take care of the church of God? Not a novice, lest being puffed up with pride, he fall into the same condemnation as the devil. Moreover, he must have a good testimony among those who are outside, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. Likewise, deacons. Now, this is interesting because the elders were to be the shepherds of the assembly, but the deacons were to be their assistants. And the deacons were, in essence, the men deacons were to be sort of in training to eventually become elders as well, right? So he says, deacons must be reverent, not double-tongued, not given too much wine, not greedy for money, holding the mystery of the faith with a pure conscience, but let those also first be, now notice he says, let these, that is the deacons, also first be tested, then let them serve as deacons, being found blameless. What I want you to notice here is, the men, both the elders and the deacons who were apprentices for eventually becoming shepherds of God's people, they were to first be tested before they were given any responsibility, whether as an apprentice or as a shepherd. They had to be tested first. And I want you to notice that their character, their behavior, all these things were to be under the microscope. How they rule their own house well is important to demonstrating whether or not they can then take that responsibility to a larger group and be given more responsibilities. Those of your immediate family, those who live in your home, if you're going to be a faithful shepherd, those who are under you as a husband or as a father in your own home, if you have grown children, you know, I mean, you may be coming to this with later in your life and you don't have children at home anymore. But you can still teach your wife, right? You can teach your wife. In any case, you must take charge of your own home. You must be faithful in your own home as a shepherd in your own home and being tested there before you can be given responsibility over a larger group of people to shepherd them as well. All right, now I want you to go to 2 Timothy chapter 2. We're almost done. We'll be done here in just a few minutes. Now, 2 Timothy chapter 2 again. And I want to read 20 through 26. But in a great house, and again, this is still all of 1 and 2 Timothy is all about Timothy training apprentices. Because as he, as Paul's apprentice, is now training other apprentices, and he's training other elders. All right, so he says, verse 20, but in a great house there are not only vessels of gold and silver, but also wood and clay, some for honor and some for dishonor. Therefore, if anyone, and these are people that Timothy may have his eye on to possibly take under his wing to teach them, as Paul said to, you know, as he said to do in chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. As he does that, he's looking for people. He needs to look for people like this. And these are the people that are qualified to become an apprentice with the intent of eventually being a shepherd of God's people. He says, therefore, if anyone cleanses, verse 20, but in a great house there are not only vessels of gold and silver, but also of wood and clay, some for honor and some for dishonor. In other words, as you're scoping out these young men, Timothy, to train, there are some who are gold and silver, but there are also some who are wood and clay. There are some who can be used for honor, and there are some who will bring dishonor. But he says, therefore, if anyone cleanses himself from the latter, that is from things of dishonor, if anyone cleanses himself, he will be a vessel for honor, sanctified and useful for the master, prepared for every good work. Flee also youthful lusts, but pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace, with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. Look, well, let's continue. But avoid foolish and ignorant disputes, knowing that they generate strife. And the servant of the Lord must not quarrel, but be gentle to all, able to teach, patient in humility, correcting those who are in opposition, if God perhaps will grant them repentance, so that they may know the truth, and that they may come to their senses and escape the snare of the devil, having been taken captive by him at his will. Timothy was to look for men like this, men who were cleansing themselves of any filthiness of the flesh, to make themselves useful for the master. If they did not cleanse themselves from their own evil things, then they are not useful for the master. They're not qualified to even be taken as an apprentice and to ever even hold the office of a shepherd of God's people. So I just want to do a quick summary. Just I'm going to name these off. If you desire to be a faithful shepherd of God's people, even beyond your own immediate household, those who live in your home, then there are certain things that you need to do. Actually, 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 15 says to be diligent or be earnest, to present yourself. Actually, let's just read that. 2 Timothy 2. 15 says, be diligent or earnest to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth, or expounding it, or apportioning the word of truth rightly. And you need to be skilled in the word. All right, so the summary. Number one, you need to study. You need to be diligent in the word. You need to know the word. You need to be able to handle the word. You need to be able to apply the word appropriately in every situation. You need to cleanse yourself from your personal flaws, those things that you know are displeasing to God, so that you will be a vessel fit for the master's use, or a vessel of honor. You need to be obedient to God's commandments. You need to obey them, and even those that are seemingly insignificant to you. They're important to God, or they wouldn't be his commands. All right. You need to humbly and faithfully serve in the lowest positions. You need to be a servant before, or a slave even, before you can be a shepherd, which is why there were first deacons, and then those proven were promoted to elders. And you have to faithfully demonstrate your qualities. You have to demonstrate faithfulness in the little things before you can be given greater responsibility, as Jesus said back there in Luke chapter 16. And finally, never try to exalt yourself, but wait for God to exalt you in due time. That was what Peter had to say to the elders in 1 Peter chapter 5. Let God fight your battles. This is the final thing I want us to look at. Just a couple of verses, Jeremiah chapter 17. Verse 5. Thus says the Lord, cursed is the man who trusts in man, and makes flesh his strength, whose heart departs from the Lord, for he shall be like a shrub in the desert, and shall not see the good when the good comes, but shall inhabit the parched places in the wilderness, in a salt land which is not inhabited. Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord, and whose hope is in the Lord. That is, he allows God to do it. He doesn't try to do it in his own flesh, right? He shall be like a tree planted by the waters, which spreads out its roots by the river, and will not fear when heat comes. But its leaf will be green, and will not be anxious in the year of drought, nor will cease from yielding fruit. The heart is deceitful above all things, and desperately wicked. Who can know it? I, the Lord, search the heart. I test the mind, even to give every man according to his ways, according to the fruit of his doings. Two different classes of people. Those who trust in themselves, they trust in man, they try to do God's work man's way. Or those who trust in the Lord, who commit everything to God, who seek, who desire the presence of the Lord, just as Joshua desired what he saw, the relationship he saw in Moses, who pursue that with all their heart, who are faithful even in the little things, and who, when they are tested, are approved of God. These are the ones who God will exalt to be shepherds at the proper time. So any of you men who are seeking to be shepherds of God's people, this lesson is extremely important. You're not going to do it by yourself. You're not going to do it because you desire it. You're going to do it only if you cleanse yourself, if you prove yourself, and then if God exalts you. All right. God bless. It's been a pleasure being with you, and we'll see you next time.